Welcome back to another episode of Boys in the Zone. I'm your host, EJ Savage, and we've got a fun guest here. We've got Rucker at Old Man Rucker on X or Twitter, whatever you want to say it. Host of Boot to the Face podcast. Pleasure to have you in here tonight, man. How are you doing?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the invite. Excited to talk about some Cowboys football.
Absolutely. We've got a whole host of things, but firstly, I want to say my apologies on being a little bit late to the show. Was on a network affiliate show, 8 o'clock spot with the Grid Network. If you have time, go check that out. But yeah, we just went a little bit long, but overall, good show. And so now we get to the Cowboys talk. I've been talking NBA the past hour, so I'm glad to get back to my home, my sweet spot. First discussion we're going to have tonight is based on that week one matchup against the Cleveland Browns at their house. How does that bode for the Cowboys? Is that a good draw week one? Would you rather see them early in the season, later in the season? What are your thoughts and opinions on that, Rucker?
It's going to be a good test, honestly, because one of the main issues that we've been having the past couple of years is stopping the run, and Cleveland can run the ball. Like if Chubb is back and healthy off his injury, but I mean, they showed last year that they can still run the ball without Chubb. So I think this will be a good test for Zimmer's defense. I think it'll be a good test for the new linebacking core that they're going to roll out, and just a good test overall to see, like, I mean, I know it's 1 week, right? But if you come out and give up 250 yards to Cleveland, like you did the last time you played them, it's not going to be a good omen and a good feeling for Cowboys fans going into the rest of the season. If you can come in and not even hang with them, if you can come in and stop them, you know, if you can come in and make Deshaun Watson have to beat you, make their passing game have to beat you, as opposed to them just running all over you, I think it'll look good and it'll be a good confidence booster for the whole defense going into the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, you have a really good point with that in regards to our run defense, because Cleveland has one of the best offensive lines in the league. They have one of the best runners as long as Nick Chubb is healthy. You know, hopefully he is. But it's one of those things that has been our Achilles heel in the past. So how much does Mike Zimmer change that? How does losing Jonathan Hankins and seeing Mozzie come back into the fold as a true nose tackle instead of playing that three tech? We'll get a little bit into that later on in the show, but that's a big deal. And I think you're right on the money with that. Another facet of this game is Myles Garrett. He's going to be going up against your rookie offensive tackle in Tyler Guyton. And then also, you know, we need a bounce back season from Terrence Steele as well. So both of your bookend tackles are going to have to be on high alert. They're going to have to be on their keys. Luckily, they're going to be fresh against Myles Garrett, not battling injuries and nagging stuff. But still, man, that is a tall task for Tyler Guyton. Your thoughts on that in particular?
I'm not going to lie. I'm not as worried about the offensive line as I am defensive line and linebackers. Dallas has been really good the past few years of drafting offensive linemen and coaching offensive linemen. Like, we didn't think Terrence Steele was going to be worth anything, and now we're depending on him to be the best right tackle he can be. We didn't think Tyler Smith going into his rookie year, he was drafted high, but like, if you remember in training camp and all that, he couldn't even get the left guard snaps.
And then he ends up
being the starting left tackle the whole season, then moves over to left guard and ends up doing well there. So I'm not as worried. Now, you're going to have a rookie center and you're going to have a rookie left tackle and you're going to have a quarterback, hopefully, that won't be on a one-year deal that you don't want to get killed while he's out there, that you want to be able to have time and be able to make plays. But I'm just – that Green Bay game, man.
Watching Aaron Jones
and everybody else just run right through the defense. Like, I need to know, you know, I know Zimmer's got a couple linebackers now. We drafted one. We signed my man from the Chargers. But I need linebackers that aren't safeties playing linebacker. Until I see it, I don't believe it yet. So that's where my focus is going into week one.
Yeah. My guy, Engineered Psycho, Ruben, he says – that is a bad matchup for the Cowboys offense week one. Also, Cowboys defense is a bad matchup for the Browns. Which QB makes the least mistakes gets the dub. I'm very, very excited and not worried, but just I guess reserved about Trayvon Diggs coming off the ACL and being the same player. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very, very fun having two ball hawk corners. And Jordan Lewis is no slouch either. So you're talking about Diggs, Bland, Lewis, all of those guys can take away the ball. And since coming back from, you know, the whole scandal, how does Deshaun Watson, you know, play? He hasn't been very accurate. He hasn't been to the same player that he was in Houston. So if Bland, Lewis can get some turnovers, that's going to be a big factor in this game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm excited to see what Diggs looks like during the offseason as well. He was having such a good year last year until he got hurt. I would have loved to have seen what he and Bland could have did full strength last year, because like I said, Diggs was playing really well. He wasn't getting the picks that Bland was getting before he got hurt, but he was making plays last year.
He was wrapping up and tackling. He was coming up to hit people. He was playing a lot stickier coverage, not jumping on those double moves as much. He just looked like he was more in tune to his keys and his reads as a corner. And a lot of people don't understand, like, corner is a big guessing game a lot of the times. You're guessing based off of their alignment and what they're giving you pre-snap. You're deducing whether or not this route can be ran from this set or this can happen from this set, how the other line wide receivers are in play. You're understanding all of that. And then you also have to have in your mind, do I have safety help over the top? Where are my linebackers? Are they dropping into coverage? Are we bringing a blitz? All of those things come into factor for cornerbacks, especially in those zone coverage schemes. So it's going to be a big, deal whether or not Zimmer can get the best out of Trayvon Diggs, knowing that in the past he has been a little bit of a gambler. So very interesting. And then just probably the biggest storyline with this whole matchup, Amari Cooper coming to play his first game against Dallas since we traded him to Cleveland. That's going to be fun because, you know, Amari Cooper, say what you want about him, but he is very good when he is healthy and fresh, and it's a week one matchup. So it's going to be fun seeing that. I won't like to hear the Coop chant, but man, it's going to bring back some memories from whenever he was picking up first downs for us as well. Speak on that and speak on, you know, how you view Amari Cooper in that offense, knowing that they are kind of a heavier run scheme, and how he had really, I think he was the first 1,000-yard receiver there in quite some time for Cleveland. And they've had some good wide receivers there with OBJ, with Jarvis Landry in the past.
Yeah, I think Cooper is, it's weird to say this, but I think he's underrated as a wide receiver. I think he gets a lot of criticism, even when he was in Dallas. Like, I always liked him. I know he had like a year and a half stretch where is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Can he play on the road? Can he not play on the road? But he also put up numbers when he was with the Cowboys, put up numbers with the Raiders. He's put up numbers with the Browns since he's been there. Like, he's played for different quarterbacks and he's put up numbers with every one of them. And I think he's only like 27 years old.
He's still very, you know what, one of my favorite stats is whenever Calvin Ridley was coming into the league, he was actually older than Amari Cooper, who had already been in the league for 3 years at that time. So that's kind of the player that Amari Cooper was. He was dominant early in Oakland at that time, obviously Vegas now, but he's one of those underrated players, man. Yeah. I like what you're saying there. Sorry, go ahead if you had more.
Well, he's definitely, if Diggs won't be ready, don't want Diggs guarding Cooper, because Cooper's also deceptively fast. Like, he's a bigger guy. He can catch, like, his radius is really good. Like, he's just a big target. But if he gets a step on you, he's gone. Like, it doesn't look like he's moving fast, but it also doesn't look like anybody's ever catching him from behind either. So,
yeah.
And his route running is just ridiculous. That was something that I noticed when he was in Dallas. Like, so many touchdowns he caught was just off sheer, like, the first five steps off of his route, he was wide open. And it's like, how can you not like a wide receiver like that? So you know, I don't want to bring up any PTSD from anybody, but I still don't understand that trade. I don't understand what they got for him.
Yeah.
Just the whole nine is like Cooper in this offense would be so good right now.
You know, I went back because we got the fifth round pick from Cleveland, and I wanted to see if that fifth round pick was the pick that landed us Deron Bland, but it wasn't. It was a different pick, unfortunately, which would have made for a great storyline because it would have been Deron Bland, the player that we got by trading Amari Cooper versus Amari Cooper. But unfortunately, that's not what it was. He was actually another fifth-round pick in the same draft, though. But yeah, Amari Cooper, it's going to be fun seeing him again. I got to shout out some of my mainstays here. My guy Vince says, what's up, guys? My guy Ruben also came in, and I think he's still watching right now, popping in some questions as well. Says, what's up, EJ? Hashtag Cowboys Nation. My guy Tacos and Touchdowns, which is my guy Aaron B. Says, good afternoon, gents. And my guy Falcon, he says, I am here. Wanted to bring this one up, though. Bland will more than likely be covering Coop. Diggs covering makes me a little bit nervous week one. Who do you think will be covering Coop in that first game? Do you think that Zimmer is going to rely on the veteran of the room in a Trayvon Diggs, or is he going to take the air of caution in knowing that Deron Bland came off an all-pro season, Diggs is rehabbing from the ACL, or is that an answer that's going to be you know, revealed to Zimmer during training camp? And if that's the case, who do you see primarily guarding Cooper?
You know, it's a tricky question, right? Because before last season, Diggs was I know he only played like four games, but he was known as a gambler, and you could beat him with the double move. Mm-hmm. And then he got hurt, and hopefully if he's 100%, I go with Diggs, because if you remember last year, yeah, Bland had all the pick sixes and all that, but he got burned a lot also. Like, double moves and route running was something that he wasn't the best at staying with. So if you put a guy like Amari Cooper on Deron Bland, and God forbid you don't give him any help, like, it's going to be a long day out there. And if you got Cooper in fantasy football, like, he'll probably end up with 12 catches or something like that. Now, you test Deron Bland enough, you'll end up watching him go the other way with it once too. But it's,
you know, I think that a couple games Deron Bland got a little bit too focused on getting that pick six record. I think you kind of saw that in the Seattle game. DK was doing a number on him. Mm. It's one of those things. I don't think that he was getting burnt a lot. And honestly, relative to being, you know, that quote-unquote gambler, I think he's a lot stickier in coverage than Diggs was at this same point in his career. So I like the trajectory of Bland. And I personally, if you ask me today who I thought would have the better season, I would say Bland, just because he doesn't have the injury that he's going to have to rehab and kind of get over as well and trust. And especially just dating back to the past players that we have seen coming off of ACL, Michael Gallup. Mm. You talk about Terrence Steele. You could throw in other names just off the top. I can't remember. But those guys that we've hedged on the, they're going to be better off the ACL, they haven't. And so I'm a little bit reluctant to say that Diggs is going to be CB1 per se, but man, I think you got a really good 1-2 punch there, and I'm very, very interested to see how the Cowboys deal with you know, an AFC team that really wants to pound the ball and really wants to control the clock, because it seems like this version of the Cowboys that we've seen under Mike McCarthy's West Coast offense likes to score the ball but be methodical down the field, 12 play drives, but through the passing attack. So it's very hit or miss, because if you get an incompletion, it stops the clock versus a run that continues to drain the clock. So we'll see what happens. I think it's a good draw personally with Cleveland week one instead of later on in the season, because they're such a tough team, man. They're going to, you know, they're going to want, they're playing a tough division too. They're going to need games that they have to win and have to pull games, you know, out of their butt sometimes. So I like that we have to play them week one instead of later on in the season. What is your opinion on that?
Well, back to Diggs real quick. The good thing, if there is one, about his injury is it happened earlier in the season.
Yes.
You know, like Steele got hurt right before the playoffs, I think, and Gallup was game 16 or 17, I believe. Yep. So we do have that going for us as far as the Diggs injury. He'll have months more than they did to recover, so hopefully he'll be. And along with Overshown also, we can't forget about him, who was looking pretty good during the preseason last year before he got hurt. And he got hurt in the preseason. So hopefully with those guys getting injured earlier than the past two examples that you brought up, they'll be able to come back quicker. As far as the earlier in the season that the game is, I honestly don't think that matters because, like, as a Cowboys fan, man, you know just as well as anybody else, it's the Cowboys, right? So Deshaun Watson will come out and he'll probably have his best game that he's had in a couple of years since he came back from the suspension and all that. You know, Amari Cooper is going to be looking to score. The whole team is like, the thing you do is you dunk on the Cowboys because you're going to be on national TV. So they're going to get everybody's best shot, and it's going to start week one in Cleveland next year. And this is not a bad football team either. So getting the best shot from the Cleveland Browns, if you can come out and win that game week one on the road and win it decisively, like, it'll definitely change the perception I have of what I have on the Cowboys going into the season.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. We're going to jump into the second conversation, which has to deal with this overall defensive tackle depth and the current names on the roster. Obviously, you got Osa Odighizuwa, you got Carl Davis, you've got Mazi Smith. You picked up a late round draft pick and an undrafted guy. Or I think maybe he was undrafted. I off the top, I can't remember. And then we have who am I missing?
Hankins is gone, so
Hankins is gone, but not a lot of depth, not a lot of veteran depth either. So who do you believe to be the starters there week one, and how do you manage that room? Are you looking outside for a possible release from another team to kind of fill that veteran role into that room? Because you're relying on a lot of young guys. I think Osa is your most veteran player there. And then are you also leaning on a D-Law, Junior Fehoku to kind of come in there and play some D-tackle as well? What are your thoughts on that, man?
I think the Cowboys' strategy is it's time for guys like Junior Fehoku and Mazi Smith, who, you know, they want him to put back on weight. He's got a shoulder injury. So hopefully, you know, he's eating every day because he can't really work out. I don't know what his injury is looking at like right now, but I know about a month ago he had went in for surgery. So if he can get back up to size, but they're just depending on a cheaper, younger defensive tackle position. Osa, I love this guy. I think he's a very underrated player as well. Between him and D-Law, they're really the only ones that play the run on the defensive line. But I think what you're looking at is a mixture of Osa and Mazi Smith. Obviously, you'd have Junior Fehoku and whoever else you can put in there. But I also think with the defensive end that they drafted, there'll be some downs where you'll probably have D-Law playing defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Parsons next to either Smith or Odighizuwa and I can't remember if the guy's name is Greenlaw or...
Who are you talking about?
The one they drafted, the defensive end.
Marshawn Nealon.
Nealon, I don't know why I'm saying Green. Nealon, he's they clearly like him. So I'm looking at a lot of packages.
Play some
like
three tech,
where,
probably.
Yeah.
My biggest question is, Mazi is really your only nose tackle on this team, and he's coming off of a shoulder injury. He's barely. I think Mike Zimmer in his comments, I think it was yesterday, he said he's 305 now. So he's above 300 pounds at least, but that's not big by any means for a nose tackle. I mean, you definitely are probably going to be looking for an outside source from another team. And maybe you can get a John Ridgeway back in the fold that you lost at the Commanders. Maybe there's a guy that's kind of fallen out with another team, and you can pick him up, and he can be a good nose tackle for your team. But right now, man, it's scarce at that position. And the other guy that I was forgetting about was Justin Rogers, so out of Auburn, I believe. So, man, it worries me because you want to say that you, like, we brought it up in the earlier discussion with Cleveland, like, you want to say that you're getting better at stopping the run, but not having a true nose tackle on the team that's, you know, up to weight in a Mozzie, and then behind him there's nobody, does not make me feel good. Now, the linebackers, and we'll kind of go into that a little bit, the linebackers are much improved, in my opinion, just basically because they're healthy and we're not relying on safeties. But man, it could be another year of us not stopping the run again.
And that's the scary part, right? It's like, this has been an issue 5 years now. Like,
yeah.
when are we gonna allocate resources to stopping the run? Like, we're quote unquote trying to save all this money by not signing guys. We let a bunch of guys go, and, you know, they're nitpicking with Dak and CD and Parsons about their money also. It's like, then where is the money going? Because one thing I know for sure, Dak, Parsons, and CD are going to be here next year. If we can't stop the run and we can't run the ball, then it's going to be another early exit, and it's going to be another waste of a year for them. Because that playoff game last year, there's no way you put up 30 points and you still lose by almost 20, right? Like, that just doesn't make sense. And it happened from the run game leaking so much in the first half that by the second half, they were just giving up plays through the pass and through the run. Just like, you let Green Bay get an avalanche towards you, and it just kept going. So I said all that to say this. I don't like the strategy of hoping that maybe you get somebody else's trash and it becomes your treasure. Like, I think they should have definitely allocated free agent money towards that before all this, but we are where we are right now. So hopefully the coaches can coach them up, and hopefully Mozzie takes a bigger step than he has the past couple of years, and just a lot of hope as far as defensive tackle goes.
Yeah, my guy Falcon, he's a Michigan fan. He says, Mozzie will be 100% different than he was last year. People do not realize the difference of scheming for your players versus forcing your players to fit your scheme.
That's a good point.
I agree with that. I think that I don't know who told him to lose all that weight and try to be a three tech.
It was probably Dan thing. Quinn. He wanted three to play tech, linebacker.
For me, three tech is a position where you have to have shown pass rush savvy in college. If you hadn't shown that, then I'm not trying you at three tech. I'm trying you at a nose tackle, where your sole reason for being on the team is to stop the run. Mozzie Smith had 1.5 or 0.5 sacks in college. I know sacks aren't everything. He didn't get a lot of pressure either. I never saw it from a pass rushing perspective with him. I saw the athleticism absolutely with his testing at the combine, but it didn't jump off the tape whenever I watched the all 22 on him at Michigan. I was very weary of him as a first round pick. I had him more of a 2-3 grade, but that's just because I don't think that you're worth a first round grade as a defensive tackle unless you have that ability to rush the passer. So, you know, Mozzie, I really do think that he's going to have some growth under Mike Zimmer, because he requires that of his players. He holds them accountable. He's not buddy-buddy like the Dan Quinns of the world. And he's already said, hey, I'm going to be down on the sideline. I'm going to be holding people accountable. I'm going to be in your face. Like, he's an in-your-face coach. So I like that from Mike Zimmer. I'm excited about that. And I do want to bring up this question for my guy, Ruben, though, here. He says, if you had to choose now for linebacker three, who is it, Overshown or Maurice Leofau? For me, it's clearly Overshown. And I would probably, depending on how training camp and preseason goes, I think that Overshown could beat out Damone Clark. But you know, time will tell. A lot of the times in today's NFL, you're only playing two linebackers on the field at a time anyways, unless it's a rundown. So we'll see how far along O'Rashawn is in his rehab. But, you know, as my guy Rucker mentioned earlier, it happened very early on in the season. Actually, it was a preseason game. So he should have plenty of time to be back and healthy and, you know, just the ability to kind of sit back and not play football for a long time and understand how much it means to you and understand, you know, hey, I need to dive into the playbook and understand these things and my schemes, where I need to be, is a good thing. I think that really helped Dak Prescott because he got thrown into the fire early on in his career when he came off of the broken leg incident. I think that helped his career overall. I really do. So I'm interested to hear your input on this.
I like your answer on it because that's where I was going too. I know the question was about Marist and O'Rashawn, but let's not just assume Damone Clark's got the number two linebacker position locked up. I'm a fan of Damone Clark. I like his story. You know, I know he had that awful injury and they didn't think he'd be able to play. He kind of overcame it. And for a while, he was playing really well, but he also, again, that playoff game is the last game we remember, and he didn't play well at all in that one. So, honestly, I think those are your number two and number three linebackers, is O'Rashawn and Marist over Damone Clark. And I don't think that's a bad thing, though. I think having four good, solid linebackers is something that we haven't had in a while, like to where we can withstand an injury now. You know, if O'Rashawn doesn't come back 100% healthy, or he's kind of hesitant or trepidatious in what he's doing, you can let him watch and let him see what's happening in real time from the sideline. And you can put Clark in, or you can put Marison, who just came off of, you know, a college career where he's been playing in the past year. But I think the linebacker position, they have done really well with that this season. Could it be better? Yeah, but for what they had allocated to it and a draft pick.
You know, and Falcon brought this up is, I'll just read what he said. Oh, it's right here. Yeah. People don't realize the difference of scheming for your players versus forcing your players to fit your scheme. Mike Zimmer is very, you know, willing to bring in players that have been in his scheme in the past. And we see that with Kendricks. That's going to help the linebacker room immensely.
Oh, yeah.
Having a guy that's already been in that scheme and help them break down the nuances and understanding of what he wants to see on the field. I think that's going to go a long way versus Dan Quinn's hybrid system of, okay, sometimes we're bringing down our strong safety. He's really going to be playing linebacker. You're going to be sinking back. You're going to be dropping into coverage as a disguise safety kind of look. Those things are very, very easy to get confused in, especially with young players. Damone Clark had to jump from a weak side linebacker to the middle linebacker after LVE went down. That hurt them. Playing undersized guys at the linebacker position last year hurt them. I think that just stepping back from it and maybe not being so crazy with how you utilize your players as chess pieces will go a long way. Because here's the deal. If I tried to, you know, take my, I don't know, I'm trying to come up with a hypothetical and off the top of my head. But if I, let's say I try to take my steering wheel and put it on my, you know, in replace of my actual tire on my car, it wouldn't work very well.
But Dan Quinn could make it work. That's what he would think.
Yeah, well, he would think that, but it's undersized. It's not going to work. So,
right.
It's one of those things, man, you got to understand what your players are. And sometimes you can't force the player into your scheme. And with that, coinciding with that, you have a guy who's already executed your scheme at a very high level in Kendricks, and he can help the young players understand and help them get better so that your whole team as a unit on defense is more cohesive, has better chemistry, better understanding, so that you don't have those glaring holes in the run game or in the pass game, like we saw in Green Bay. Against Green Bay, where there was just players running wide open.
Yeah, I'm I'm excited about the Mike Zimmer hire, for one, just because it's a new voice on the defensive side. It's a new scheme on the defensive side. It's a new everything. And usually when you have a coaching change, the players react well to it, at least the first year or two, right? But Dan Quinn, I think his success happened more so in turnovers and sacks. But if you weren't getting either one of those, then the defense was exposed big time. And he wasn't able to adjust to certain things. Like, there'd be some games you'd watch and it's like the team would just keep running the same play in the same scheme every time, and he would never adjust to it. So hopefully, you know, Zimmer was in Minnesota all those years, and they had a good defense all those years. Had a good defense when he was in Dallas. They had a good defense when he went to Cincinnati. So hopefully the game hasn't passed him by, and he can come in, and it's not like he's got to work with nothing. Like, you got all pro players at every level. Well, sorry, not the linebacking core, but you got all pro players. You know, D-Law was all pro,
at least Pro Bowl. I think Kendrickson made a Pro Bowl at least, you know?
Right. So, I mean, it's not like the cupboard is empty. Like, you have skilled players on this team. It's just a matter of you as a coach putting them in the position for them to succeed, as opposed to you putting your scheme in position to succeed, and hopefully they can catch up with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to bring us into the segment talking about Mike Zimmer and his overall impact on this defense, how you anticipate it going for this defense, and the moves that we've kind of made as a bargain bin kind of shopping front office. Do you see this defense as having a legitimate shot to being as good at creating turnovers, or do you think that we're just going to be, hey, we're steady at all levels of the field. We're not letting up the big play, but we're not gambling 24/7. We're not trying to confuse the quarterback 24/7. How do you see Zim getting into that kind of mindset for this team?
I think the turnovers and the sacks will still be there. Because Deron Bland is still there, Diggs is still there, Parsons is still there, right? Like, Lawrence is still there. You still have good players that make plays. Again, it's been a running theme of this show, and it'll be a running theme of every Cowboys podcast you listen to throughout the season. They have to stop the run. I'm not worried so much about other teams' passing attack. Like, they'll be able to. You know, it's hard to play defense in the NFL now, and the pass and the tackle do what it does, but just stop the run.
This little kid wanted to say goodnight, so I told her she can come out here and say night to me, and she can say hi to my friend. Say hi. Do you want to say anything real quick, Emmy? Nothing? All right, I love you. You have a good time. All right, have a drink. Thank you. I'm okay. Thank you. Anyways, jumping back into the conversation. And my guy, Ruben, he says, Zim was great for Datton Nugent and Sean Lee, he just needs hustle guys at linebacker and D-end, big dudes to plug in the middle with a safety that wants to knock off heads. And you have that in Donovan Wilson for sure. You have a rangy safety on the back end with Hooker. You mix in Thomas and why am I forgetting the other safety's name? Forgot his name. Sorry. If you're watching, I'm sorry. Or do you know it?
I'm literally losing his name too. He switched numbers. He wanted to be number zero, right? What is this guy's name? Anyway, whatever. If we can't remember his name, I guess it's not important.
No. I'll think of it. It's Marquise Bell.
I wasn't even thinking of Bell. I was thinking of
Wanye Thomas.
No, he was the starting linebacker.
Israel McQuamu.
No, he was the starting safety with Hooker, and it was Hooker.
Oh, J.
It was
Ron
Donovan
Curse.
Wilson. Yeah, Curse.
Well, J'Ron Curse is technically still a free agent. So
they hadn't even re-signed him. Okay.
No, so we'll see what happens with that. My guy Steven Mack in the building. Yo, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Real quick on the last comment you read about Zimmer using Detwin, and I agree with that, but at the same time, like, the game's not the same either. Like, when Detwin played, they weren't throwing the ball 40 times a game, you know what I mean? It was more of a run the ball, and as far as the safety that could come knock people's heads off, that's another thing. Like, the game's not the same as it was then, so it'll be, I think this time with Zimmer will be a little different, but I do expect him to still be able to coach a good defense. And I mean, yeah, if we're being real, like, Dallas doesn't need to be top one, two, or three. Like, if they can get top 10, top 12, I think this offense can put up enough points to where that will help out big time. But when I say top 10 through 12, again, stopping the run.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the biggest thing, man. It's one of those things that all of the good playoff teams do. They run the ball well as an offense to help control the clock and take some pressure off the quarterback, get them in third and shorts, which the Cowboys were horrible at doing last year. They relied on Dak Prescott in third, 7, 8, 9 way too often. And then they stop the run on defense because it puts the pressure on the opposing quarterback. So when it comes playoff time, we have to have one or both of those problems fixed in order to actually go deep in the playoffs. And that's my biggest question mark with this team. Can we run the ball better? Which I do have hope, because you're hopefully having Cooper Beebe in there in the middle in the center position. And he's working along Tyler Smith. He's working alongside Zach Martin. I think your interior is going to be pretty good on the offensive line. Does that dictate into running the ball well? Terrence Steele in the past has been very good at run blocking, a little iffy on the pass blocking. So if you can get a good offensive line and allow your running game to help your quarterback out, I think it's going to be a very fun offensive side of the ball, you know, to watch. Defensively, I think it's going to be great during the regular season. However, when it gets to the playoffs, do you have the players necessary to stop the run is the biggest thing. I think Zimmer has the know-how. He has that savvy. He has the understanding of 3-4, 4-3 schemes. He can switch it up at any given moment. He can confuse opposing quarterbacks if he wants to in disguise. However, that's not really his game. He usually just... He wants his cornerbacks to play physical on the outside. He's known for being a very savvy secondary coach. So I'm looking at our depth guys in the Marquise Bells, Wanya Thomas's, Israel McQuamu's, Eric Scott Jr., Kalen Carson, those guys to really step up, because somebody's going to go down eventually in the season, and you've got to not have somebody completely be a blinking light to the opposing quarterback, like, throw my way because I can't guard anybody. That's my biggest thing on the pass defense. And then on the run defense, we've got to figure out defensive tackle, and you've got to get a good rotation of linebackers that can all play, in my opinion.
Yep. Agreed.
Let's jump into this running back talk. Currently on the roster, I believe we have Ezekiel Elliott. We have Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, Hunter Lipke, Snoop, Connor, Royce Freeman, Malik Davis. I think I got all of them. Oh, Nathaniel Pete. All of those guys are running backs or fullbacks. Who is your 3 to 4 running backs you're going to keep on the roster? And what is your running back committee looking like? Is it a 60-40 split between your two top backs? Is it a heavy load for Zeke once again here in Dallas? What are you looking at?
I think obviously Zeke will be one of the top running backs, Dowdle, and hopefully Vaughn gets a chance this year, because honestly, of all the names you just read off, besides Deuce Vaughn, there's no pop in any of those names.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Like, nobody on there, I'm thinking, man, if they get to the second level, they might be gone. Like, nobody. Mm-hmm. Except for Deuce. Like, he's the only one that would have a shot at that. So I'm thinking...
Rico early on in the season, but the more loads he gets, the more carries he gets, he's very injury prone. So you've got to keep that in mind as well, but yeah. Go ahead with your point.
So I'm thinking honestly, I don't think you go into it with a set, you know, 60, 20, 20, or 33, 33, 33, you know, all these guys got to get the same amount of carries. I think it's whoever's got the hot hand that day. Like, I don't think you give it. Obviously, Zeke will probably be the starter, but I think you go into every game and you see who's got the hot hand, who's running well versus the defense you're playing. And that's who you ride with. If it's going to be a running back by committee, then make it a running back by committee. Don't make it, well, Zeke's got to get 15 no matter what. You know, Rico Dowdle's got to get this many.
He's got 15 because he's not number 21 anymore. So he can have 15 on the back of his jersey. He don't need 15 carries, right. I'll tell you that.
And I like Zeke, man, but, you know, it was like handoff 2 yards. Now, 4th and 1, hell yeah, give the ball to Zeke. But unless he found a fountain of youth when he was in New England that we don't know about, like, it happens so fast for running backs, and I hate how fast it happened to him, but it's going to be a true running back by committee, I think. I don't think you can just go in and lean on one guy. Because if they do lean on one guy, honestly, it's going to be number 4. It's not going to be any of them.
Stamp your, let's say they keep 4 running backs or 3 running backs and a fullback. Or you can just go 3 running backs if you want to, no fullback. Who do you think those names are?
Zeke, Dowdle, Vaughn, and Lipke.
That's the exact same I would have. I think you have to be weary of Dowdle possibly going down, so you probably have one of those guys stashed, like a Malik Davis on the practice squad. I don't know if you could get Royce Freeman on your practice squad or not. And truthfully, I would be looking for another player cut from another team. Jets, Miami, Denver, all of those guys have or teams have surplus of running backs. They're probably going to have to cut one of them. So, yeah, I think that realistically, those are the 4 names. But we can't completely eliminate the outside name possibly making this team.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, just you see it all the time, training camp cuts. So
I really wish they would have drafted a running back even in the later rounds, just to throw another younger back in there that might have a little bit of pop. Like, it felt like it was right. And don't get me wrong, I think they did well in this draft. I think they filled a couple of holes that they needed. Hopefully a couple of the guys that they drafted will hit. But I really just wish they would have drafted a running back, even with like 4th or 5th round. I just don't know who I would give up that they did draft.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it tough.
That's the hard part. Well, my thing is like running back is so strange to me because they have a short shelf life. So how much draft capital do you want to spend on that, you know, position? And then 2, like, if you're drafting a later round guy, how much ability do they really have to be a difference maker? Yeah. So can you not find a guy that's free, doesn't cost you a draft pick, you know, on the waiver wire or free agency that can be just as good as this guy that you're going to pick in the 5th round? That's kind of where you got to juggle it. So I think that sweet spot's 3rd, 4th round for running backs in nowadays. And unfortunately, you didn't have a 4th round pick because of the Trey Lance trade.
Yeah.
And the extra 3rd round pick, you got Maurice Lewifau, which fills a higher position of need, in my opinion, at linebacker and gives you depth. Because, I mean, Kendricks is only on the 1-year deal. And we're going to get into that. Might as well just segue. I have it on my notes right here, 1-year magic. Can the Cowboys have a 1-year magical season? You have players like Osa Odigizua, Kendricks, Dak, your coach, both offensive, your head coach and your defensive coordinator on 1-year deals. There's probably other players that I'm missing that are on 1-year deals. How do you realistically juggle all of that pressure and have a magical season knowing that the catalyst of your entire season hinges upon how you do in the regular season, making the playoffs, and then knowing that cloud above you of we have fallen short every single year. What makes this year different? And especially without the front office being behind you and trying to get the players, you know, to push you over the edge. How do you deal with that? And do you think it's of high importance or impact on the players or coaches or both? How do you juggle that, man?
Real quick, the running back thing, just to touch on that for a second. I think every year you just between the third and the fifth round, you draft one until you find the right one because it's cheaper. If it doesn't work out, you know, you can have a couple years with somebody playing special teams or something like that. But I think every year between the third and fifth round, you make sure you draft a running back. And when you get one, fine. You don't have to do that next year because you got one for the next 3 or 4 years. As far as the one-year contracts, it could go both ways, right? Like, they could all come out, they could play their asses off, and it could be a ridiculously good season for the first time in who knows how long. Or they could come out, go 1-for-4 in the first 5 games, and then it turns into, well, I'm not going to be here next year, so I might as well save my body, save myself. You know what I mean? So it's really tricky having coaches and players alike not having a guaranteed future that they can rely on. So hopefully they come out the gates and they're doing well because, I mean, I don't know if everyone remembers what that Wade Phillips last season looked like when he was kind of the lame duck already. Mm-hmm. And once they got to Green Bay, you know, Green Bay again, and they got just mollywopped that game, it was just like you could see everybody had given up. So I don't
and
see
they made
Dak,
the change. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see Dak doing that, but I could see a couple other people doing that.
Not to cut you off here real quick though. I said on my last show, people don't understand that this schedule that's going to be released tomorrow is vital in the importance for Mike McCarthy. He is going to be honed in on that schedule because if it's stacked up where he has a gauntlet early on in the season, and he only goes, you know, 2-5 or something like that, I don't think the Joneses are going to care. I think that they are willing to move off, see what Brian Schottenheimer has or Mike Zimmer, because they have a pass with Mike Zimmer, and they would fire Mike McCarthy mid-season. I really think that that's a possibility. So if you can stack wins early on in the season, have your tougher games later on in the season, I think that's incredibly advantageous for Mike McCarthy and his ultimate tenure here. His ability to stay here hinges upon that schedule. What are your thoughts on that?
I could see the Joneses doing that, which would be just crazy to me, right? Like, the guy does nothing but win 12 games every year and get you to the playoffs. The one time he didn't, his quarterback broke his foot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I also could see if they come out and they go 5-2 the first 7 games and it's a brutal schedule, that just as much as it'll build dissension and, you know, guys wanting to give up if they do bad, doing well will build so much confidence for this team.
That's true. Yeah.
That, and, you know, McCarthy's a good coach, man. I know people don't want to hear that, but the guy's a good coach. He won 1 Super Bowl with Green Bay. And I say this all the time. He didn't do it by having one magical season where they won a bunch of games. They got lucky here and there. They went to the playoffs every year. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Patriots, how they did it, they went to the playoffs every year. Peyton Manning got 2 Super Bowls by going to the playoffs every season when he was in Denver and Indianapolis. Roethlisberger, always in the playoffs. The Saints were always in the playoffs. A lot of these guys only got 1 or 2 rings, but they go to the playoffs every single year, and you got to throw your head in the game. You can't win the Super Bowl if you don't make the playoffs. And I think McCarthy is a coach that gets his team to the playoffs every year. Now, when you get there, it has to fall just right for you. But I'd much rather have a shot every year than come November. It's just like, I wonder who we're drafting.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, man. 3 straight 12-5 seasons. Obviously, you only have 1 playoff win in that, you know, in those 3 years. But overall, man, it is encouraging to just make the playoffs, that those, you know, 3 years consecutively, because under Jason Garrett, we were always in the talks of, are we going to go 8-8 this year? You know, and that was a legitimate thing, especially with this whole Dak talk. And I want to get your opinion on Dak on his 1 year contract, but Dak has never had a losing season. He has always been a winner, a proven winner. Does he need to play better in the playoffs? Absolutely. But so does the entire team, man. So does the entire coaching staff. So does the front office need to support these players and say, this year it's different. This year is the year we exercise these demons. This is the year where we put the stone in the slingshot and we slay these giants. You know, this is the year. So at some point, you've got to shift your philosophy, because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. So I'm tired of this same process landing us in the same position year after year. You've got to be willing to back up your players. You got to put your money where your mouth is. Sign Dak up for the big contract. I don't care. Front load it. You know, shove it all to the back. I don't care how it's aligned. If there's an out after 2 years, I really don't care. I want to see this team make a conservative effort to go above and beyond. They say they went all in last year by trading two, you know, picks for an aging Stephon Gilmore and an aging Brandon Cooks. Sorry, that's not good enough.
That's not all in.
What's your thoughts on Dak and this front office shortcomings?
So I'm a big Dak fan. And I know he's got his limitations in certain stuff, but I'm a big Dak fan. And I read this stat the other day, and I'm going to read it to you as far as playoff stuff. In three of his playoff losses, because he's 2-5, the Cowboys defense have allowed 30-plus points. So already, if he's not putting up 30-plus, they're not going to win. Mm-hmm. Other quarterbacks' records when their team puts up 30-plus, Tom Brady's 2-3, Aaron Rodgers 1-5, Drew Brees 0-3, Joe Montana 0-3, Brett Favre 0-7, Peyton Manning 2-4, John Elway 0-6. These are like the top of the top in quarterback play that shows you when your team gives up 30 points in a playoff game, your chances of winning go way down, regardless of how great or good. Because a lot of Cowboys fans don't think Dak is on that great level yet. But I'm probably a little older than you, so I don't know how far back you remember, but I remember when Aikman got hurt and he had to retire, and we ended up with a baseball player. We ended up with Quincy Carter. We ended up with like 40-year-old Randall Cunningham and Vinny Testaverde and just
Chad Henne and
these guys just going over and over again. And then we get Romo, who, you know, he was up and down, but he was better than anybody we had since Aikman. And now we got Dak, who I personally think is like a step above Romo, but because he hasn't gotten the playoff success, he's not getting the credit that I think he deserves now. But get rid of Dak if you want to and see what happens. Like, these quarterbacks that people are drafting with these high draft picks, they're not 100% guaranteed like you think. I'm trying to think what class it was where Trevor Lawrence's class.
Wilson, Lawrence, Fields. Yeah.
All those guys have either gotten traded, released, or aren't in the league anymore besides Trevor Lawrence. Like, it's not as guaranteed as you think it is. And you got a fourth-round quarterback that you didn't take advantage of the fact that he had such – and you – now, granted, it was hard to do that because you were paying Tony Romo so much money even though you released him. But when he was on his rookie contract, you didn't take advantage of that. And now you want to start over again. And I just – I'm not looking forward to that. I feel like sign him – I know people were going to be mad about the number. That's the going price for quarterbacks, man. The guy
What did Jared Goff got? I think 53
a year,
something like that.
And the first thing people will say though is Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl. I mean, if we're being honest, he should have went to another one last year because they were beating San Francisco down. Yeah. But I take Dak over Jared Goff any day of the week.
Yeah. So I don't think it's close. I think if you threw Dak on Detroit with Ben Johnson as the offensive coordinator, he would have better numbers than Jared Goff, and he would be better under that regime than the Joneses. A lot of people don't understand how much more. I know that NFL players, like all NFL players, are probably, you know, famous to a certain extent. More so than any is the best of the best quarterbacks in the league, and whatever quarterback is the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, regardless if they're good or not. So, it's hard, man, because like my guy Ruben, he says, look, I like Dak, you know that, but I feel like he will be asked to waive his clause. Lance takes over with Bill waiting to take over next year. Use those picks to build Bill's defense. Bill does like Dak, though. I'm hesitant to say that, you know, Bill Belichick is the coach in the waiting kind of a guy, because nobody wanted them in this coaching cycle. I think that Bill is a good coach. Like, he's a legendary coach, don't get me wrong. But at some point, you have to realize the game evolves. It changes. Not to say that Bill is not a good defensive mind, because really the principles of defense doesn't change that much over time. It's offenses that change a lot and how certain positions are utilized. A pass-catching tight end wasn't very popular, you know, 15 years ago. There wasn't a lot of guys that are, you know, Travis Kelce's and, you know, TJ Hawkinson's, the Sam Laporta kind of guys in the league. Now, it's almost like that's the version of tight end that you want versus the blocking tight end. Running backs nowadays, you would probably want a running back that has the ability to catch out of the backfield way more so than you'd want a guy that can just run straight up the gut, because they have the versatility to do certain things in the passing game. It's all passing oriented nowadays. So offenses very frequently evolve. Defenses don't. I don't know that Bill, and I think we've seen this without Tom Brady, that Bill has been the same level of coach. Obviously, we're talking about the greatest quarterback of all time to play in Tom Brady. Still, though, he should have, if he's that great of a coach, he should have had his team still pretty good, you know, because, I mean,
he had a number one draft pick and quarterback also. So it's not like he had a bum.
And he had free reign over the roster there. People forget that in New England. Like, he had free reign over the personnel, and the GM was very much in the back pocket of Bill and what he wanted to do. So I don't think that Jerry Jones would be willing to allow Belichick to have that same power here in Dallas. And I don't think that his coaching style is completely indicative of where the NFL is moving in the future anyways.
I agree. I think Belichick is a sexy name, but I mean, just look at what he's done since Brady left. Brady got another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Belichick, I could be wrong on this, but I don't even think he went to the playoffs since he left.
I don't think they did. Mac Jones' rookie season was actually surprisingly decent. I'll get off the Bill talk, because that wasn't really the point of the conversation. It was more along the lines of how does these 1-year contracts dictate how the Cowboys perform this season? We talked a little bit about Mike McCarthy. We talked a little bit about Dak Prescott. Talk about Mike Zimmer. Talk about these other players that are big parts of your team, in Eric Kendricks, in Osa Odighizuwa, in DeMarcus Lawrence, for that matter.
I'd like to think Zimmer. I find it hard to believe that he would go somewhere I know he's got a one-year deal, but I find it hard to believe that he doesn't have some kind of, we're going to sign you to 1 year, but, you know, we're going to bring you back. Don't worry about it. Like, we know you're, we can't do it because McCarthy's on his last year and Dak is yada, yada, yada. I think there's some people on one-year deals that they don't have to worry about it, but.
Well, I'll push back on that a little bit because I think that the whole reason why Zimmer is willing to take the one-year deal is because the Joneses said, hey, listen, mid-season, you could end up being our head coach. We might move off of McCarthy mid-season if it's not going right. Now, where I think that the one-year deal factors in is if they do have to hire somebody that is an up-and-coming name or, you know, somebody that's kind of outside the realm of the typical names thrown out there with the Bill Belichicks or the Mike Vrabels, I think that they're going to look at their guys from different past destinations. They're not going to want to retain Mike Zimmer. That's where I'm at with that.
See, I don't know how, because I could see it happening both ways, but if I'm Mike Zimmer, actually, if I'm Jerry Jones, do I really want to tell Mike Zimmer, hey, if stuff doesn't go well, you could be the guy. And now he's not coaching as good as he probably should because, you know, he's got aspirations of taking over. Not saying anybody would throw anything, but I don't know. I just find that if the Joneses are doing business like that, I find that to be very...
Well, I think that that was the main catalyst of bringing Mike Zimmer in the first place and not pushing for Al Harris as DC or who was the other guy that was, gosh, I forgot his name. And maybe it was one of just those minority interviews, but from the Jets, some guy who hasn't had head coaching experience. I think that was the big factor in Rex Ryan versus Mike Zimmer was both of them had head coaching experience. Both of them are good defensive coordinators. So if we have to move off of Mike McCarthy, they could possibly get in there, you know what I mean? And run the ship.
We don't want another Ryan here after what happened with Rob though. like I think with the experience, the Cowboys versus Buddy Ryan and then having Rob Ryan here, I don't think Rex Ryan had a shot realistically to be the coach. I think that was all kind of PR type stuff, but I don't know, man. I just think if they're doing business that way, like that's really scary as a fan. And then it kind of makes sense as to like why you don't get free agents and why you don't get the quote unquote big name coaches and things like that. Because if they can't trust your front office, then it's going to be hard to lure people here. You know what I mean? But I know we went a completely different direction than what you were leaning towards. As far as the one-year contracts, the one I'm worried most about is Dak. I feel he's got a no-trade clause. He's here this year regardless.
Let me jump in here real quick. If you lose Dak for nothing after this year and you let him walk, that is the biggest malpractice in sports that I think I've seen in a long time.
I agree with
your statement.
And where I was about to go is be prepared because if he goes into this season without a contract and he plays on the last year of this contract and next year he's a free agent, if I'm Dak, I'm leaving. Like, I've done nothing but give everything I can to this organization and I take the blame, and as many times as the Joneses can, they make him look like he's not good enough. You let me play on this contract, I'm out of here, because there's probably six teams in the NFL that wouldn't line up to get Dak Prescott to be their quarterback right now. Maybe even less than that. I'd have to think of like who the top tier quarterbacks off the top of my head are, but if you don't think that Dak Prescott in free agency is going to get paid by somebody else, probably a really good thing. Could you imagine him running out there for Washington in two years?
That would hurt, man. I mean, obviously they just took Jaden Daniels, but or the Giants. Like, the Giants know better than anybody how good Dak Prescott is. He's really, won 11 straight games against them.
He's really good at MetLife.
So imagine that. And I don't know that Dak would want to go to another, like a rival, but maybe he would have that, like, fire in his heart, like, screw it, I'll go against the Joneses twice a year. I'll bury their season twice a year. The disrespect that it takes from this organization to not once, but twice get to this point right now, after Jared Goff got his original contract, after Carson Wentz, who Dak was better than both of them, obviously Jared Goff goes to the Super Bowl with the Rams, I get that. He's better than both of them, got their contracts, and then the Joneses put him on the franchise tag. He breaks his leg or whatever happened. I don't even remember.
That was the year he broke his leg.
And then he finally, he plays, or it's all, you know, goes throughout the training camp or whatever. He gets the contract finally. To allow that to happen again, to get to that point again, was just, it's disgusting, man. It really is. It makes you sad and mad and angry as a fan to see this team continually pay okay players good because they think they're going to get better. In the case of Zeke, in the case of Jalen Smith, in the case of Terrence Steele, but not pay your best players when they are already good. In the case of CeeDee, in the case of Micah, in the case of Dak, in the case of Dez back in the day. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Stop going into the same thoughts and beliefs as to how to build your organization when it hasn't worked in almost 30 years now. It's frustrating, man.
Where you're going right now with your tone and everything, I'm so right there with you. Like, I'm one of the most positive Cowboys fans you'll find. Like, I got a buddy, Robin. He's a big Cowboys fan. And we'll text back and forth throughout the games. And I'm like, it's just the first quarter. It's just the first half. Like, I'm constantly looking for the positive. I can't find it this year. Like, I've made the decision that I'm not buying any kind of Cowboys merch this year. I'm not going out of my way to, like, I went to Charlotte last year to go to the Panthers game. Luckily, they're here in Atlanta this year, so I'll be able to go to that game if the ticket prices aren't crazy. But if they are, like, I'm not dedicating my money.
Well, your money's
going
to be going to Atlanta there. Yeah. It's not going to be for the, and I know, but the
it's still, indirectly me paying to go see a Cowboys game, but I'm not financially, like, pouring into this team anymore, because I feel like the billionaire that owns it isn't financially pouring into it. Like, there was a survey that came out a few months ago about, like, the training and the cafeteria. Like, they rated all these teams.
Yeah,
like,
I saw that.
Why are the Cowboys so low on that list? They're the number one team in the world as far as finances and stuff like that. And they're so low on training tables and the cafeteria and the locker room and all. Why?
Yeah. You know, I don't know why the officials politically in Dallas and in Texas and stuff like that aren't pushing, especially more in, like, Dallas, like government or governor of Dallas, pushing the Joneses in a way that's like, hey, why are you so unwilling to try to go for it all? Do you know how much good that winning a Super Bowl would do for this community, for the city of Dallas, for Fort Worth area? Like, imagine how much business, like, people from, they call us America's team for a reason. How many people would flood into that city for a parade and bring millions of dollars of business for a single weekend?
I literally, like, took off work last year, earlier this year. I canceled them, obviously, but I took vacation days because I was like, I was ready. If they had gone to the Super Bowl, I was ready to go to Vegas. I was ready to spend a lot of money for a ticket, and I was ready to leave and go to Texas for the parade. Like, and I guess that's why I'm so bitter now, is because like this was, I feel like this was the year for us to finally, like, the path was there. We were playing the worst team in the playoffs in the first round. You were going to have two home games.
You were going to play the Lions that you already beat at home.
You were 8-0, or was it 9-0 at home? I can't remember. You were undefeated at home.
No, you were, over the past two seasons, 16 straight, I believe.
Yeah. And then you come out in the playoffs, and you just lay an egg, and then the offseason happens, and it's like the Joneses are just like, honestly, let's call it what it is. It's a soft rebuild, what they're doing. They're not all in. They're rebuilding for the next 2 to 3 years, which probably won't have Mike McCarthy in it, probably won't have Dak Prescott in it, probably won't have DeMarcus Lawrence in it. And so you've wasted the opportunity you've had with all these guys being on there. And I hate how negative I am right now, but it's just like,
I don't like being like that either.
Yeah, it's where I am. Like,
I'll say this. After all the fans flooded into AT&T, I believe it was a whiteout, if I remember correctly, for the playoff game. I was this close to buying a ticket for the playoff game. But like you, I saw the path and I said, and my dad said, hey, if they make the NFC Championship game, we're going to get tickets and we're going to go to San Fran. Because I just figured San Fran's going to be in the NFC, you know. And I was like, okay, so I'll save my money now and maybe I can make that happen. And I am so glad I did not have to sit through that at AT&T. But it's a slap in the face now, coming back full circle to all those fans, to see the offseason we put together. You were the last team to sign an outside free agent. You let a lot of your players walk, which truthfully, I'm not incredibly disappointed with the team, with the players that walked anyways. Like, I, whatever kind of a deal. Minus Tyron Smith, I probably would have kept him. Because it's another a Cowboys legend that is not going to win a Super Bowl with this team. But
especially when you, not to cut you off, but especially when you hear him say that they basically didn't even try.
Yeah.
He probably would have took, he probably would have taken a discount over what the Jets gave him just to stay in Dallas, and they didn't even try. And Tyron Smith, I loved him the first 10 years. Lately, I know he's been hurt a lot, but when he is playing, he's really good.
Yeah.
And they found a way to manage him by not making him practice every day. And he only missed, what, 3 games this year, I think, something like that. I say only, but he was there during the important games, including the playoffs, and you just let him go.
Yeah. My guy Falcon said, he had a couple comments, and I'll read both of them. The sneakiest signing Dallas had was Lewis, arguably best cornerback down the stretch last year, and we got him for pennies. Yeah. That was a move that I predicted the Cowboys to re-sign. He also said, 2 years ago, I set aside $20K to get to the Super Bowl in Arizona if it was Dallas that made it. Stadium is only 20 minutes from where I stay. In that respect, you better bring me to the Super Bowl if we make it. But
for $20K, that's way more you probably need to get to the Super Bowl. I hope you invested.
But regardless, there's so many fans that want to see this happen. And for this offseason to be like this, after it wouldn't even have been so bad, but after the all in comments, really was a slap to the face, in my opinion. So, it was, it's one of those deals, man. But closing comments, real quick, because we went a little bit over what I was expecting. But go ahead, closing comments.
Well, I mean, and that's how I feel about it, too. It's almost like, just anger and disrespect that they didn't do anything. But much like every other year, by the time the season starts, I'll be like, I think we got a shot this year. Cause you do. As grim as it looks and as grim as it feels, you still have a bunch of really good players, and it's the NFL, man. They believe in parity. They have it set up for parity. At any given time, any team could win. And, you know, it's the law of averages show eventually, right? Like, you got to get through there. So I don't think they're going to have a bad team. I think they'll probably win 11, 12 games again this season. They'll be in the thick of it come playoff time. And when the playoffs start, that's when I'll start getting nervous. But throughout the season, I think the Cowboys will still have a good year. I think they'll win double-digit games. I think they'll probably still win the division. So it'll still be a fun season. It'll be an unpredictable season. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to paying attention to what all they're doing. But I'm just not on the team of spending a crap load of money on them again this year. So that's where I am in my confidence level with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. First and foremost, man, I want to say it was a pleasure having you on. Very insightful, very easy, smooth conversation talking to you. I know I set out a post saying, like, hey, I'm looking for possibly a co-host. Rucker hit me up. This was a great little mini interview, kind of a thing. So if you have time next week, jump back on. I'm also going to have some other people on as well. Oh, and yeah. It'll be a fun time. But all of the people that are in the chat that are so gracious to watch me spiel about this team for an hour and 16 minutes, man, I can't thank you guys enough. Helping me grow, helping my channel grow. Please do leave a like, set that notification bell. And every Tuesday night, man, I'm going to come with some heat, come back with some bit of opinions, some thoughts about this team. And, I'm ready to see what training camp holds, what this team is capable of. I want to see them reach the heights despite the front office, despite the Joneses. I want to see us succeed so that the fans can get that moment. So awesome having Rucker on. Any closing statements? Tell the people where they can find you as well, real quick.
You can find me at Old Man Rucker on Twitter, Instagram. I'd lift 4 whiskey with the number 4, and then if you're into pro wrestling, I have a pro wrestling podcast with, ironically, my co-host's name is EJ on that show.
There you go.
My buddy EJ and I do Boots of the Face podcast. We've interviewed, wrestlers, and we cover all the events and stuff like that. So if you're into pro wrestling, go check that out. You can follow us on Twitter at Boots of the Face, on Instagram at Boots of the Face _. And I'm pretty sure we have a TikTok, but I'm a little old for that. So if you find Boots of the Face on TikTok, I think we do have one of those. But yeah, that's where you can find me on social media. And I will warn you, like, I cuss a lot on Twitter, so if you don't like the 4-letter words when the Cowboys are playing, I'm not a good follow because I tweet with my emotions for 3 hours on Sundays. But, yeah, I appreciate you having me, man. It was a lot of fun. It's good to get on and talk Cowboys football. Like I told you, I was doing a show that I was doing by myself where I was just kind of talking into the mic. So yeah, to have somebody interact with and bounce stuff off of, that was that was a really cool one. So I appreciate the invite.
Absolutely, man. It was a treat to have you on. If you guys do not know me, it's coming across the screen on the bottom right there. Follow me on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Boys in the letter N, The Zone on Twitter. I'm also on the TikTok and stuff like that. Barely post on there. So I'm lazy with that stuff. So don't expect too much. But anyways, thank you for your time, and go blue.